in a series like this, very practically driven series, I'm not able to touch on all the areas where gossip and slander can be fleshed out. And I'm not able to get into details for every single area. So in each of these messages, I want to make sure that we have a time for Q&A afterwards. So actually, instead of breaking down into parent and teen like we normally do in this meeting, I'm going to ask a couple of our pastors, Mr. Mahaney, Mr. Lehman, and Mr. Coughlin. Surprise. We're going to ask Mr. Coughlin to come up too. I saw him in the front row. I said he'd do a great job on this panel. We're going to talk about where this sin of gossip and slander commonly presents itself in our lives. And here we have three fathers who have done a wonderful job in leading their own kids in how to be aware of where this topic is presenting itself in the lives of teenagers. So, wherever you're at, Mr. Mahaney, Mr. Coughlin, Mr. Lehman, wherever you're at, if you guys could come up. And can we thank them for joining us on this panel? Since the series is on conformity, we have these big beanbag chairs for you guys. We thought, you know, as a youth ministry, we do everything a little differently. So these are called Fat Boys. You like that? And I know you guys are thinking, look at the fat boy on the fat boy. But here you go. Just sit on them. There you go.
Okay.
It's comfy, isn't it?
It is, very.
It is comfy. Come on, we're doing a series on conformity. We have to have beanbag chairs. So first of all, thank you guys for doing this. This is an area that we all struggle with, and this is an area that I think parents would love help and wisdom in, how to lead their own kids through this area. So feel free to jump in, any topic, but I wanted to ask this question just to start us off. Where as fathers, for you guys, as you have led your own teens through this topic, of the categories mentioned, just common areas for gossip and slander to occur in the life of a teenager, where have you seen that this is one of the most common temptations, and how have you led your son or daughter through identifying that and fleeing that? Grant, start us off.
All right.
Turn it on, she says.
Testing.
All right, there we go.
Well, specifically in the area of gossip and slander,
yeah,
or broader
in the... Yeah, in gossip and slander, or with words.
Okay. Well, I would say with gossip and slander, I mean, you've hit some of the key areas. I think a big one is guy-girl relationships. So I've just encouraged them to be very guarded in their speech, not to enter into conversations with others about those kinds of topics. And when it comes to their own personal interests, like you indicated, we've encouraged that. They are being very open with us about that, and that there really isn't a need to communicate with other peers regarding that kind of topic. With regarding negative information about others, as you wisely put, we've tried to give them categories of not communicating negative information about others, but not being on the receiving end of that, so withdrawing themselves or either speaking to someone who is talking about another person. And just a simple principle we've tried to apply there is, how would you want others to speak of you? Try to apply that rule as you are communicating about others. So those would be just a couple categories.
Excellent. Very helpful. CJ, Bob? Mm-hmm.
I'd be deferential to you two men. You are among two of the finest fathers I know.
Amen.
Well, since I was just asked to be on the panel, I'm still thinking, so I defer to you.
Very good. I'll be glad to try to serve you. I think so much of parenting is about preparation and then evaluation. So what we seek to do with our children is provide them with gospel-centered, theologically informed preparation for each day and each and every event. So that would obviously, in Chad's world right now, involve school, it would involve 1031, it would involve care group, it would involve soccer. How can we prepare him for all that is going to take place in that context? What are the theologically informed goals related to speech in that context? Just as important would be then evaluation of what did take place in that context, or the absence of what should have taken place in that context. So I think much of parenting involves theologically informed preparation and evaluation for each and every event and each and every day.
Excellent. Bob, how would you follow up with that in terms of leading and preparing your daughters, your sons, to fight the common temptation that's in these teen years?
Well, I think there's the daily practice of, I mean, CJ really is just a wonderful example of CJ and Carolyn as parents preparing Chad right now in this season of his life very intentionally, very specifically. I think there's also those moments that come up where you're just engaging your child's heart. And I think of a while back, and instructing them in what can their conversation be about. Because the example you used of just, hey, we're just going to hang out tonight. No, or we're just going to go, Joe, be together. No, we're never just together. Our hearts are always leaning in a direction. We're always wanting something, and what usually comes out is sin. So one time I got together with Kenzie and two of her friends and just talked about, we were at McDonald's, we just talked about what they could talk about when they're together. Little things like, do you ever ask your friends how they're doing with the Lord? Their times with the Lord. Ever ask them how, what their struggles are, how you can pray for them? Do you ever ask them, you know, those kind of things. So just giving them things that they can purposefully talk about when they're together, and then, like CJ was saying, following up to find out if they're really doing that.
Well said. I mean, all parenting should be informed by the doctrine of sin. We should assume the doctrine of sin, and we should prepare our children for temptation and sin. And that shouldn't be difficult for us, because we are, or should be, very familiar each day with both temptation and sin. You've emphasized common temptations. When I'm seeking to instruct my children, there is never an area that I cannot identify with. And if my instruction is to be truly born of example and motivated by humility, I will identify with them. Right now, Chad and I are reading through Ed Welsh's excellent book, When People Are Big and God is Small. And what I say to him each morning as we make our way through that book is, son, the illustrations from your life and the illustrations from my life about the fear of man might not be similar, but the essence of this sin in my heart and your heart is exactly the same. And so in relation to slander or gossip, we lead our children effectively by identifying for them ways in which we are familiar with both temptation and sin, and then seek to transfer the gospel and its practical implications for them for each and every day and each and every event.
Mm, well said. I asked some parents about just what would be questions that you would want to ask this panel in relation to gossip and slander. One question came back, given a situation where kids are talking in a negative way about a particular authority figure, and they're listening to this information, and they're left with the question, when do I stop the conversation? When do I, you know, abruptly stop what is being shared? When do I simply walk away? And when do I just walk away and then later bring a confrontation? How do you guys lead your kids in how, when they are listening to gossip, how to interact with that, when to stop it, and when to simply walk away?
Well, I think I think we, as CJ said, we can all identify with the challenge in these kinds of areas, I think even as adults. But if it is the kind of conversation that is very ungodly or worldly or is clearly putting another person in a very bad light, my encouragement, my children, would be to seek to resist the fear of man in that moment and speak up and to say something. Hopefully not self-righteously, but I think it can be done in a very courteous but nonetheless clear way, where it's just, guys, I don't think this really serves this individual to be talking about this. And not have to belabor that, but just I think a quick, simple statement like that makes the group aware that there's an individual in this setting that is willing to take a stand for righteousness.
Ken.
And I think often that can just diffuse that activity. I think there can be places where you're just withdrawing yourself and maybe you're coming back and talking to a parent later as to, Dad, what should I do in this situation? Should I follow up? And I think that's where a parent can help discern what was going on and whether it's appropriate to go back and follow up.
Excellent. What about you guys?
Well, in your fine message tonight, you made reference to silence as unacceptable. And if I am silent while someone is slandering, that is a form of approval. And my heart is being tested in that moment. My silence will be interpreted as some form of approval. So we have to prepare our children for those moments and equip them with the appropriate, specific, as Grant said, humble and not self-righteous response. And I think it's an excellent set of questions, a little difficult to answer because if you had more particulars about each, you might find that your answer is slightly different. Mm-hmm. That's why it's of critical importance that each child share in detail the content of these conversations so that a parent can give the appropriate counsel. So that counsel might have some distinctions to it. But let's be clear. If slander has taken place, I know my daughter Janelle has shared with Cad and prepared him that if confrontation is required, she said to him, Chad, I recommend you confront in the moment, because if you don't, when you get home, Dad and Mom will require you to make a phone call, and the phone call will be far more difficult than confronting in the moment.
Excellent.
Good. I have a question in regards to, I think technology can often be a common venue for gossip among teenagers. It's particularly text messaging, Facebook, email. How have you guys led your son or daughter in evaluating when it's okay for them to have a cell phone, or when it's okay for them to, let's say, have a Facebook account?
When they're 60, they can have a Facebook account.
Good.
No, that's not true. We've just tried to be very aware of what our kids are doing. Everything's open in our household. We don't let them have email accounts that only they have access to. There was this little flurry of when IMs, I mean, I don't even know if they're still really popular anymore. There was a season when they were, and we just decided quickly that's a very unaccountable form of communication. So it has a lot to do with their maturity. And we define maturity as when you mistrust your heart enough to be open with us about everything.
Well said.
That's maturity. Not when you think you know that you can handle pressure. It's when you mistrust your heart. So, Facebook, one of my children has it, but she's much older. She's not in this group. It's just too much of a temptation, I think, for unless your have the maturity, and then if you have the maturity, you won't be on it that much. And so we want to be very involved, aware, and not let them do things that are private unless we can trust that they don't trust their own heart.
Excellent. Well said.
Yeah. Well, I could relate to you how we seek to walk through any practice related to technology or the use of technology. But I think what is most important is discernment, theological discernment. So when it comes to technology, where I begin is motive, purpose, and effect. And I want to explore motive for, purpose of, effect, before we decide about the particular use of technology. So I would apply those categories, theologically informed, to any consideration of technology. And then I would combine that with the maturity or lack thereof of the child.
Excellent. Grant, we were talking the other day about just how you have led your kids in, you know, cell phone and Facebook and different parameters you've placed on them and when you've allowed them to have those different things. Can you just share some of those things?
Well, first of all, we're in an area now where I think these are wisdom categories, so these aren't right and wrongs. I think there will be different practices with different parents and different families, and that's fine. I think there are principles to apply, and I think, you know, we need to walk wisely. I think as parents, we need to recognize just the reality once again, the grid of the doctrine of indwelling sin when it comes to these areas and the vulnerabilities. One huge principle that we have sought to apply when it comes to these areas of technology is that there is a context for accountability, and that there is complete openness in this season of life for us to be able to view anything at any time. And if there's any struggle with that, we have just communicated over the years that you are then demonstrating that you are not mature enough to yet have this technology. And it's
Excellent.
As simple as that. If there's any reluctance, any hesitation whatsoever for us to follow up, to view a text, to view an email, to observe what's on Facebook at any time, that to us would be an indication that there's not the appropriate level of maturity to handle that. So that would probably be one of the biggest things we've sought to
Good.
To instill for us. And again, this is us. Brett and Brittany, who are now both in college, they didn't get laptops until they were in college. That was their both of their graduation gifts. Brett's a sophomore and Brittany's a freshman this year. And so we allowed them in college to have a Facebook account. That was just for us. Those were just battles. We just felt like there were enough battlegrounds already in the youth years. So it wasn't a right and wrong necessarily. We trusted both of them. But we just felt like there were enough battlegrounds to add something like that. So we just felt like on the level of maturity, that is something we've allowed as they've entered the college years. They had cell phones in the youth ministry years, and when it came to texting, they just knew that they were never, ever to erase a text without us being able to see it. We just wanted to have that kind of openness. And again, that was an issue for us of not trusting them. If we didn't trust them, they wouldn't have a cell phone.
Right.
But that was just a way to be able to, again, and I can't ever remember a time where with either of them, we were discovering some deceptive information they were trying to communicate through a text. It was just more at times wisdom issues, that when this person communicated this and this was your response, do you really think that was the wise thing to communicate back? So, I mean, those were just some of the safeguards we sought to put in place. With email, they didn't have individual email accounts. Again, they do now, Brett and Brittany, now that they're older and in college, but prior to that, we had a family email account where the kind of communication was just wide open for us to be able to observe.
Excellent.
Can't eliminate temptation from the lives of our children, but we can do whatever we can and should do whatever we can to minimize it and limit it. And often technology, again, depending on maturity level and season of life, can be a means of temptation or simply a distraction. And so we want to help them understand motive, purpose, effect, not simply the practice of forbidding technology, but informing them as to why.
I see one thing. Yeah, I think it's helpful for us as parents not strictly to paint these lines, draw these lines of don't. But if our children are going to use technology, it's 10:31. It's do everything, whether you eat or drink, do it all for the glory of God. So if my child wants to have a Facebook or whatever, okay, and they're a mature place and it's open, okay, let's do it for the glory of God. What you write, what you say, how you respond to people, it's going to be for the glory of God. And just to make them aware that, well, yeah, technology is for the glory of God. That's why it exists. It's not so that we can all of a sudden start sharing our sinful thoughts with people over the web or over email or IM or texting. It's for the glory of God. And that in itself, I think, can give them a direction to go in.
See, that is wise parenting.
Yeah.
He has taken a theological priority and he has applied it to technology. And then you can evaluate the content on technology and say, is this wording, is this text message, is what we read here on Facebook for the glory of God? Or is it really a form of self-exaltation?
Excellent. Well said. Let me ask one final question. Just practical tips. We touched on this, but in a conversation where communication is such that it's not truly edifying, potentially be gossip or slander, what are some practical tips that you would give your son or daughter just to get out of that conversation or to helpfully steer the conversation in the right direction? This came from actually someone who graduated last year, and just identifying that in a conversation with friends, it's not overt. Gossip and slander doesn't happen right away, but it's very subtle. And not wanting to be self-righteous, but also knowing I must stand up for righteousness, what are helpful ways that you have given your kids to steer conversations in the right direction?
I think sometimes we can have the mentality that it's got to be this bold, stop this right now! What are we doing? And I don't know if that's always the most helpful way to approach it. And I think just asking a question,
good,
as you sense something's going in a sinful direction, something like, you know, before you go any further, are we sure this is going to be, this isn't gossip? I mean, especially after a message like this, great handle. This might sound like it's going into gossip. You know what? Let's talk about something else. Or you know, before you go any further, I don't think this is helpful. I'm not sure that we should be going any further than this. Why don't we talk about something else? Just stopping it early. So that whether or not it actually gets there, they know where you're coming from. They know that you will take a stand.
Excellent. Very helpful. Any other?
Well, I mean, it's another excellent question. And the challenge is, apart from a very specific wording, it can be a challenge to answer all. I think Bob answered it very well. Maybe one other recommendation would be, I think you've got to study your child in order to provide them with the appropriate counsel. So we have four children. they would have arrived in sets of two in terms of similarities. So we have had two children who are particularly expressive, or let's just say are more conformed to the image of their father. And we have two children who are more conformed to the image of their mother. And so the counsel I would give, really to some degree, is informed by my awareness of the strengths and weaknesses of each child.
Excellent. Any other categories?
I think Bob answered it well. I would just say, as you mentioned earlier in your message, I think this can be an area that is so subtle at times. It actually can start out where nothing negative is being shared at all, and, mm-hmm. and I think eventually can cross a line into what ends up being gossip and slander. So I think just even giving them these categories of helping them grow in discernment of when that begins to take place. And I think just coming back to that issue of what would you want others to be saying of you, and just always keeping that grid on a conversation, I think will help them grow in discernment of when it is appropriate to speak up or to withdraw from a conversation.
Were you going to add something?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm affected by tonight personally and freshly reminded of and convicted about is the root of slander is arrogance. When I slander someone, it really is a form of self-exaltation. And I'm also usurping God's authority. I'm arrogantly assigning to myself authority I don't have and an accuracy of perception I don't have. And what I would say too often I am superficially aware that slander is sin. What I need is to be consistently and deeply convicted that slander is a sinful offense against God. And I become, I think, more convicted when I contemplate that the essence of my slanderous words is arrogance, and that whenever I slander someone, it reveals the absence of humility in my life and the presence of pride. And that sobering realization has a restraining effect on my speech, because it has a restraining effect on my soul. So this, I find, is a topic. I mean, I so appreciate that Jerry has provided us with another great book, and the subtitle referencing respectable sins. I would also say these are sins that too often we are superficially aware of and not sufficiently convicted concerning.
And that's just a helpful category. And these respectable sins, it's often helpful to paint them into a perspective that really is convicting. Where you're, you know, to say gossip and slander, those are common words that often can fly over our head with minimal conviction. Right. But when you speak of it as it's arrogance and you're usurping the authority of God, you're pretending to be God in that moment by arrogantly assuming you know something that only God can know.
Yeah, we're not trying simply to... We have to evaluate our speech, but our speech reveals our heart. So if all you do... I mean, it is of critical importance that we evaluate our words, but we must trace those words to our hearts. And if we trace them to our hearts, there we will discover the presence of arrogance. And in that moment, I would, you know, it is not God's intention that we despair. It is in that moment that we become freshly aware we need the gospel. Mm-hmm. And we should be freshly grateful that the Savior died for every slanderous word. And we can ask for mercy and forgiveness of sin, and we can receive power to restrain sin in the future, and not simply restrain sin. I mean, I know one of the ways, I think Scripture is clear, it is not simply about restraining sin. One of the most effective ways to restrain sin is to cultivate righteousness.
Right.
So we don't want to just be considering slander and gossip. What we want, to be doing is cultivating encouragement. Mm-hmm. For every time we encourage and identify the evidence of grace in somebody's life, I think we weaken pride and restrict and restrain slander and gossip.
Excellent.
I was just going to say real quick, I appreciate CJ mentioning that, because we have appropriately but primarily focused tonight on the put-offs regarding speech. And I think it's helpful for us to make sure that we're also contemplating the put-ons,
right,
that our speech was made for worshiping God.
Right.
So we've sought to give our children those categories as well. What's to replace?
Good.
They should be passionate worshipers. They should be open in their communication with mom and dad. They should be kind in their speech with their siblings. They should be encouraging and pointing out evidences of grace in others. They should be pursuing spiritual communication with peers. So, I mean, there are all those categories that I think are as equally important for us to...
Yeah, amen. I mean, you made a great reference to teachers. And you made also a reference to the Father drawing attention to Ephesians 4, and that was most likely verse 29, right?
Yeah.
So let no corrupt talk. So you were wonderfully informing us about corrupt speech tonight. But as you are aware, the verse also goes on to talk about edifying words. So we must not only be aware of corrupt speech, we must put on, as Grant just said, edifying words. So it's not sufficient merely to restrain oneself from criticizing or slandering a teacher. We must also put on edifying speech and be communicating our gratefulness directly to the teacher and to other students about the teacher.
Good.
And realizing that anyone in authority, I mean, God is serious about authority. And your teacher is in authority. Therefore, slander against the teacher is very serious, and it very much should be replaced by gratefulness for a teacher because of role and position, and gratefulness because of all the sacrifices they are making to serve.
Excellent. Well said. I appreciate it, Father, and we can close with this. I appreciate it, Father, this morning just saying the best way to guard against gossip and slander is to fill the conversation with God-glorifying words that are encouraging and that are bringing grace, like Ephesians 4 says. Let no corrupt talk, but words that build others up and that are bringing grace to those who are hearing. That's the best way to avoid gossip and slander. And so let's commit to that. Let's commit to conversations that are honoring to God. Let's commit to conversations that are filled with encouraging words, that are words that edify others and bring grace to others. Let me just end by referencing this book one more time. This has a chapter in it about gossip and slander. It's called Respectable Sins by Jerry Bridges. Also highlight CJ's book on humility. There's a chapter in there about words that references Ephesians 4:29. And feminine appeal. There's a chapter in there that talks about kindness as expressed through our words. So moms, I would encourage you to check that chapter out in that book as well. If this is a topic you want to continue the conversation with your teen, check out these resources. And if you have any questions about specifics in specific areas that you face, please feel free to email me, email your pastor. We would love to try to work through specific situations that you are facing as you are seeking to honor God in your speech. So can we thank these three men for just coming up here? Excellent. All right, you guys are now dismissed. It was great being together. The meeting for those involved in the youth drama will begin in 10 minutes. will be on the other side of the building. Thanks for being here tonight. See you next month.